Hello, friends. This is Andy Atwell welcoming you to Come, Let Us Reason Together. This next half hour will be dedicated to putting the Bible back into its number one place in the hearts and minds of mankind. Throughout the centuries, the Bible remained the number one book sold. Only today has it taken a back shelf position in men's lives and minds. Even Christian bookstores have more books about the Bible than the Bible itself. The Bible is the only book written by God, and in it alone is found the pathway to life. Come now, let us reason together with Gilbert Larson and his friends.
Hello, this is Gilbert from New Mexico.
Hi, this is Andy from Vancouver.
And this is Steve from Arizona.
I kind of hesitated where I said it was from. You might think I'm lost, but because we are in Vancouver right now, but I am from New Mexico. And we went through some of the parables, the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th parable that were found in the Bible that called themselves parables. And this is found in Matthew chapter 13. And the first one was early on, but this is in verse 44, talking about the treasury, and then 45 and 46 talks about the pearls. And Andy had some thoughts on that.
You know, these two parables, the one with the hidden treasure and the pearl of great price, they are like bookends, and they are a witness. A witness are the same, and they're right after each other. He's doubling something here, and I haven't seen him double before, but he's doubling this and letting you know right here that this following God is your whole life. And what's the cost of it? Everything. And then he says the second time, oh, by the way, it cost you everything right here. And he doubles it, it's a witness right on top of each other.
There's actually some other parables or stories about actually true accounts of people telling him about the kingdom, and he was very rich, and he left all depressed. Now, some people, Jesus didn't tell them to leave everything. It was interesting, one, Zacchaeus, the little short guy that had to get up in the tree, and he said, I will give a certain percentage.
He set his own criteria, and that was acceptable to Jesus. He didn't give a change to it.
Well, maybe he wasn't so in love with his money, and maybe it wasn't that important to him, but this one rich ruler whom Jesus loved, he loved him dearly. The first thing Jesus said, and he was expecting Jesus to stop here, is to, you know, keep my commandments. And he listed off certain commandments. And this young rich kid had done every single one of them. And then Jesus got to, well, give everything away and come and follow me. And he couldn't do it. So he had a hitch apparently in his giddy up that he could not do that. And the Lord hit him with that right between the eyes, because only the Lord knows our heart. And there could be something that, because like they say, you can't take it with you. That's absolutely right. You cannot. Because when you go, you leave it to, and it might even not even be your kids you leave it to. It could be to the IRS.
No, I see what you mean. Jesus deals with people on an individual basis. He makes big statements across everything, but he does deal with people on individual basis. Yes, I see what you mean.
Here, it was everything. Then this is the first step.
Yeah.
This is the first step. And we were talking about, I couldn't remember your little adage about, this is not chicks and bunnies.
Oh, chickies and bunnies.
This is not.
No, this is serious.
Yeah, this is a big one. And then 53 to 58, we're going to finish off chapter 13 and then go right into chapter 14 of Matthew.
When Jesus had finished these parables, he departed from there And he came into his hometown and began teaching them in their synagogue, so that they were astonished and said, "Where did this man get this wisdom and these miraculous powers? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary, and his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? And his sisters, are they not all with us? Where then did this man get all these things?" And they took offense at him. But Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and in his own household." And he did not do many miracles there because of their unbelief.
So here are the names of his four brothers, James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas. And you were talking about that, Andy.
I tell you what, it's amazing. I've told this to people before, and they just can't believe it, because they were always taught that he was an only child. And here he's got four brothers and two sisters. So what's the minimum amount of children that are in that family?
I think at least two sisters. It's just plural.
But based on this, it says, how many is the minimum amount in his family? Four plus sisters, two plus one. The minimum amount of children is seven.
Yeah.
Could be more.
It could have been more girls than boys.
We don't even know.
They could have been like 12.
We don't even know, but we know for sure it was at least seven.
Right.
Isn't that something that he puts, that's in here, but then there are people on the earth that believe that Jesus is the only child of Joseph and Mary. They believe that. That's taught to them. And it clearly, right here is written.
And one of them is part of his, part of the fellowship, part right. of him, part of his ministry. They didn't all necessarily, but at least we know one was believed in what he said and walked with him. It'd be interesting, too. What would it be like going to high school with him? Or I wonder if he was always the smartest one. He might have been. And it sounded like he was starting to take up the trade of carpentry and so on. And I'm sure he worked. How'd you like to be in the same class and graded on a curve? I don't know if he would have any exceptional, well, he might have been, because he didn't have sin. And I think one of the biggest problems when you get to be a teenager, I'm thinking about him in high school. He might have really shined in high school, because each one of us, I think, in our teenage years, we have some kind of distraction. And he took on the form of a man. He took on a man's body and took on himself our skin. I call it skin, but he had a chance to have the same lusts that we have, but he resisted them all. He took on the fallen form of a man. Okay, chapter 14 of Matthew 1 through 12.
Oh, I wanted to say one more thing about this that we didn't say the last verse. He says, so people were offended at him. They were offended at him. He was in the things he said in his own hometown. They took offense at it so much that they tried to kill him one day and throw him off of a cliff, but they didn't. And here he says, a prophet is not without honor except in his own country and in his own house. And he's saying something to his followers here, that if they follow him, they won't have honor in their own hometown and within their own families. That's a part of following him, that you're going to be offensive. It's going to be offensive to them that you would, when you follow him.
And you have to get over it. That's what my wife used to tell me. My wife was a very gentle, kind person. But she was very realistic too. And she was kind and gentle to me, and she was realistic with me also. Okay. John the Baptist is the next subject. And we're going to find out a little bit more about him in verses 1 through 12.
At that time, Herod the Tetrarch heard the report about Jesus and said to his servants, "This is John the Baptist. He is risen from the dead, and therefore these powers are at work in him." For Herod had laid hold of John and bound him and put him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife. For John had said to him, "It is not lawful for you to have her." And although he wanted to put him to death, he feared the multitude because they counted him as a prophet. But when Herod's birthday was celebrated, the daughter of Herodias danced before them and pleased Herod. Therefore he promised with an oath to give her whatever she might ask. So she, having been prompted by her mother, said, "Give me John the Baptist's head here on a platter." And the king was sorry. Nevertheless, because of the oaths and because of those who sat with him at the table, he commanded that it be given to her. So he sent and had John beheaded in prison, and his head was brought on a platter and given to the girl, and she brought it to her mother. Then his disciples came and took away the body and buried it and went and told Jesus.
Well, this is definitely not a chicks and bunny story. This is an interesting, very interesting, it's a landmark, it's a monument that the last of the priests that lead men into the temple, into the holy place of God, a son of a priest, and it shows that the Old Testament is going to be done. It's not finished yet, because Jesus hasn't died on the cross, but it is interesting that this is a landmark, and it's like slow down ahead, you know, before you come to the stop sign. It's like that. It's the Old Testament is coming to an end. Anybody see anything else they wanted to?
Shows a little bit more about John's temperament, too. He told Herod, who was a very important official, that he was not allowed to have his brother's wife, and he got thrown in prison for it. And then the woman that he said that about ended up waiting and for the right moment and killing him for it. So he was put to death because he took a stand on the subject of marriage, and it cost him his life.
And don't forget, John the Baptizer was Jesus's like a second cousin. Do you think second
cousin?
Cousins?
I don't know how close, but it was his relative. I got relative part. So
yeah, I think. They were cousins or second cousins. 13 through 21.
Now when Jesus heard about John, he withdrew from there in a boat to a secluded place by himself. And when the people heard of this, they followed him on foot from the cities. When he went ashore, he saw a large crowd and felt compassion for them and healed their sick. When it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This place is desolate, and the hour is already late. So send the crowds away, that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." But Jesus said to them, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." They said to him, We have here only 5 loaves and 2 fish. And he said, "Bring them here to me." Ordering the people to sit down on the grass, he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up toward heaven, he blessed the food, and breaking the loaves, he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds. And they all ate and were satisfied. They picked up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 full baskets. There were about 5,000 men who ate, besides women and children.
Now, we want to go into this one about the 5,000 being fed, but isn't it interesting in verse 13 that Jesus heard about John and withdrew from there in a boat to a secluded place by himself? He might have been mourning. I mean, he was still...
He didn't want to be around a lot of people.
Yeah, it sounded
he
like...
He was upset.
Yeah, he took on the form of a man, I'm sure the emotions and feelings, and that was a close person to him. And I don't know how much time they had together at all. It never says any of that. He might have known him prior to when he started in the ministry. And that'd be interesting to know if we really could go back and to be with the Lord and ask him these kind of questions, have him explain some of these relationships. I'd have a lot of fun asking him questions about this, how many times they made contact and, you know, what was their life like together, both in the flesh and John the Baptist being Holy Spirit filled, but Jesus took on our carnal bodies, our carnal nature. And you ever wondered about that? So
I know at times it looks like things are a movie and then we get snapshots.
Yeah.
And this is more of snapshots. And the other one goes a whole picture and this one goes click. Oh, he was here, he was here, he was here, he was here. And you don't get to see all of that.
And so he draws away by himself, and then all of a sudden in verse 14, here's a large crowd again. And, oh, one other point I was going to bring up too. If you go back up, here's John the Baptist. Remember it says that to gain this treasure, he sells all that he has and buys the field and the pearl. He sold all that he had and bought the pearl. And here, John the Baptist, it's a prelude to John Baptist giving it his all. He gave his whole life to preach before the coming of Jesus. He only lived to the age of about 33 and a half, just like Jesus. He gave up his life. He gave up, and that's still being young, you know?
33 and a half is young.
Yeah. It's interesting how all these things segue into each other, don't they? And so these are a story. So the hero, in this instance, fulfilled both about the hidden treasure and the costly pearl, and that would be John the Baptizer. And then Jesus feeds all these people. And it says he felt compassion and healed their sick, but he also fed them. And so how about... when food becomes, in other words, Steve's going to have to work all day just for one day's worth of food, enough calories to live. Andy's going to have to work one day for enough calories to live. And I'll probably die. I won't be able to. Oh, anyway, we all have to work one day. That doesn't even include boarding or clothing. So it looks like we'll have to work more than one day to get clothing, and I don't know if we'd be able to afford housing when that time that is the one seal when a quart of wheat is one denarius is one day's pay. So what, you know, here's another thing too. Look at 19 of chapter 14. He took the five loaves and the two fish, and looking up toward heaven, he blessed, and they add the word food in here. He makariosed, and breaking the loaves, he gave them. He didn't bless the food.
So
that is added. In other words, with a very extremely thankful, happy heart, he
divided.
He broke the loaves. He gave them to the disciples, and the disciples to the crowd, and all ate and were satisfied. And then it multiplied from the original. They fed the 5,000, and then it multiplied. They had more left in the end. And how many loaves did they have? Five loaves?
Five loaves, two fish.
So one loaf fed 1,000. Can you imagine dividing? How many slices are in a loaf of bread? 10, 20? 20. Okay, 20. Okay, 20. So you'd have to take each slice, what, 50? You have to make 50 pieces out of one slice of bread. And they were all filled, and then they took up more than what they had before. And here's the next one.
That'd be a loaf per thousand.
Right, a loaf per thousand.
A loaf per thousand.
Oh, okay, then you take...
Per thousand.
Okay, so you take 20 into that. So it's 50. Let's see, you take a loaf.
5,000 people, five loaves. 1,000 a loaf.
Right.
And then you get some fish.
Well,
and then
I'm thinking about 20 slices in there and divide that between 1,000
people.
Yeah. So you got 50. You got 50 people will divide one slice.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, it's 5,000 men who ate and not besides women and children.
So we're rounding down.
Well, well, it's even, maybe it's 100.
He changed it for us. Thank you, Steve.
And if they're teenagers, you got 150 people you're feeding off one slice of bread.
You'd think the women and children would outnumber the men. One would think that.
I would think so.
So now you got about 10,000.
Or more.
The point is, this is pretty miraculous here. Yeah. This is miraculous, yeah.
And Matthew 14:22-33.
Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he sent the crowds away. After he had sent the crowds away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. But the boat was already a long distance from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night he came to them, walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It is a ghost," and they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." Peter said to him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But seeing the wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?"
Remember, immediately shows the sign of a servant. So Jesus is now serving.
Yeah. When they got into the boat, the wind stopped, and those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, you are certainly God's son.
In the last few verses, when they had crossed over, 34 through 36, when they'd crossed over, they came to the land of Gennesaret. And when the men of that place recognized him, they sent word into all that surrounding district and brought to him all that were sick. And implored him that they might just touch the fringe of his cloak, and as many as touched it were cured. And nobody has anything else to say on that. Did anybody? We're going to go into chapter 15.
Just noticed the difference from when he was in his own hometown, that he could do no miracles there because of their unbelief. But in verse 36, they implored him that they might touch the fringe of his cloak, and as many as touched it were cured. That's a big difference in people's belief in what Jesus could do for them.
I knew you as a kid. You're not.
They had this whole... They could have heard about the fact of that woman touching him, and so they thought, okay, let's just do that. That was their rule, that they came up that we could touch the border and many be touched. So that was like an agreement between people.
It was probably spread from that first woman that where that
yes,
happened.
With the issue of blood.
Yeah, they'd heard the story about that. Okay, 1 through 11. Here's in a 1 through 11 context.
Then come to Jesus from Jerusalem Pharisees and scribes, saying, "Why did the disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they wash not their hands when they eat bread." But he answered and said to them, "Why do you also transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition? For God said, 'Honor your father and mother,' and 'Who reviles father and mother, let him die.' But you say, 'Whoever shall say to father and mother, that wherewith you might have profited by me is a gift to God, shall in no wise honor his father.' You have made void the law of God because of your tradition. You hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain they worship me, teaching for doctrines precepts of men.' And he called to him the crowd and said to them, 'Hear and understand, not only what comes out of the mouth defiles the man, but what goes out of the mouth, this defiles the man.'"
What proceeds out? Oh, that almost sounds like it. It said it. Whatever enters the mouth, that defiles a man. That's what man says, but it's just the opposite of what comes out of our mouth. This defiles a man. What I remember about this, was it's interesting, is this thing about the tradition of the elders. And I've been reading a Jewish history book written by a gal for high school kids. And it's simple reading, but there's a lot of facts you won't find in the highbrow books. It's it just goes through some of the history of the Jews living in the different towns from about the 1500s, coming out of the Dark Age, and until they discover America, and then them coming to America, and so on. And by the time, 1,500 years after the time of Christ, they had instituted about 400 rules on how to wash their hands, is in that book, when they eat. And here it is. It talks about it in this. It spends time in here in chapter 15 of Matthew. Then some of the Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem and said, "Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders?" Well, they had 400 rules by this time. How many rules do you need to wash your hands? Maybe a couple, three?
Use soap.
Yeah, use soap, scrub them for, you know, so many minutes, and then rinse them off and dry them. Maybe
really getting picky here about washing your hands.
Yeah.
And so Jesus got rid of the picky real quick. He didn't wash his hands at all. I'm not even going to talk about the hand washing program. I'm just not going to wash mine.
Okay, Andy. I'm not going to eat at Andy's house. Well, what a way to end this one. Anyway, we will see you again and continue on in Matthew chapter 15. Until we meet again, may God lead you into all truth.
You can contact Gilbert and his friends at www.gilbertandfriends.com. That's www.gilbertandfriends.com. Or write to him, Gilbert and Friends, P.O. Box 820347, Vancouver, Washington 98682. That's P.O. Box 820347, Vancouver, Washington 98682. Or call us at 360-600-6726. That's 360-600-6726. We invite your comments as we reason together through the Bible. Thank you for joining us on Come Let Us Reason Together, and reminding you all to eat a healthy breakfast every morning. Our favorite breakfast is the Bible, because it is written, "Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God."